So, on to Parshas Toldos. So, the major events of the Parsha are centered around, no surprise, Rivka and Yitzchak. Starts out with Rivka's pregnancy and the problems that she has. Vayisro Tetzu Avadim B'Kirba. The kids are running around inside her. There's some kind of struggle going on. She doesn't know what's happening, and I want to come back to her question about why this is happening. But she seeks out God. She wants Hashem to tell her what's going on. She gets a message about how the two of them are going to be at each other's throats, and one will be over the other. And she says, "Oh, okay, yes, yeah, that makes me feel better." And then, following that, the kids are born. One of them holding the heel of the other, one being Esav, the other being Yaakov, and that segues into the sale of the birthright, right? The sale of the Chorah. Esav comes in from the field. He's exhausted. He's hungry, and he says to his brother, who is preparing some kind of red soup, lentil soup. He says, "Give me some of that red stuff." That's how he gets the name Edom. And Yaakov says, "Sure, just sell me the birthright. Sell me your Bechora." And Esav says, "What do I care about a Bechora? I'm hungry." And so he sells the Bechora for this bowl of soup. And just, you know, talking about things on a basic outline level, not into, you know, any of the depth yet. Following that, there's a famine in the land, and Yitzchak and Rivka and their two kids descend to Gerar. Once again, the pretense of not being married, Rivka and Yitzchak not being married. And they get caught, and they get in trouble, and then they settle outside of Gerar. Yitzchak becomes a farmer. He needs water, right? You're in Gerar, you're in the high Negev, you're in the upper Negev area. He needs water. Well, that shouldn't be a problem. His father, Abraham, dug wells. However, the Plishtim filled the wells, which I want to come back to as well, in terms of why they filled up the wells, but the Plishtim have filled the wells, so Yitzchak starts to dig new wells. And every time he digs a well, the Plishtim take it for themselves. Until finally he manages to show them he's here to stay. And at that point they accept him. Abimelech from Gerar comes out and makes a deal with him. And they remain in the land. After that we get this one sentence about Esav's first marriages. Esav marries Kenani, is it Kenani women or Yishmaelite women? Sorry, he marries Kenani women. He marries Chiti women, the Chiti being one of the tribes in the area. And we're told that that makes Yitzchak and Rivka very bitter. They're very upset. They don't like the wives that Esav has taken for himself. And then we get to the bracha. And this bracha is not necessarily the same thing as the bechora. It's very important to recognize they're two different words. They sound similar. There is, on the one hand, the birthright, as in you're the firstborn, you get extra. And then there's separate from that, there's a bracha that Yitzchak is going to give, which is not apparently automatic. But Yitzchak wanted to give the bracha to Esav. Rivka hears about it. Rivka says, "Nothing doing. I want Yaakov to get it." She manipulates things that Yaakov comes in, masquerading as his brother. He gets the bracha. Then Esav comes in. He is furious. And he says, "Don't you have any bracha to give me?" And Yitzchak says, "Well, here, yeah, you can have this sort of second level bracha." Esav says, "I'm going to kill him." Rivka hears about that and says to Yaakov, "Time for you to get out of Dodge. I want you to go back to Aram." And she tells Yitzchak, "You know, it was good for Yaakov to, you know, see a little bit of the world. I want him to get married to somebody. I don't want him to marry a local girl. I don't like the local girls. Let him go to our family off in Aram." And that's what he does. And that's the end of the parsha. Okay? That's your basic digest. Oh, and then you get Esav's second marriages. After that, Esav marries other women. Okay. So, having just done the 4-minute outline of the parasha, let's go back to the beginning of the parasha. And we have to start with Rivka's pregnancy and the birth of Yaakov and Esav. And for this, you really do want to have a chumash in front of you. There's at least one more there on the side. Because I'm going to ask you what a pasuk means.
There's so much going on here.
Oh yeah, no, you can be on Toldos forever.
Yeah, I'm like overwhelmed.
In a few weeks,
this is what's stressful.
I think that this is what we should do.
There's so much that we just don't know.
Really,
yeah.
There really is.
Okay, let me should learn this part.
Okay.
In depth. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so we have another 45 minutes or so. I see some of it at any rate. And we start with this pregnancy of Rivka and her searching for advice on what's going on inside. The kids are running around inside her. It's specifically, you want to look at Bereishis Chav Hei, Pasuk Chav Beis. Okay? So, Vayisro Tetsu Abanim Bekirba. The kids are running around inside her. Vatomer Imkein Lama Ze Anochi. Now, can you translate that? Vatomer Imkein Lama Ze Anochi?
If so, why me?
Yeah.
If so, why am I thus? See, part of the problem is the word zeh. The word zeh doesn't belong. If it's really why me, then it should be lama anochi. Lama zeh anochi. Zeh means this. Why? It isn't why is this happening to me? Because that doesn't work with lama zeh anochi. It's just the words don't translate that way.
Why is this me?
Right. It's a very hard sentence to read.
Then why are you torturing me? Type of thing. No.
But if it is, then why not say that? Right.
If you like, according to this translation, it's why do I exist?
Well, where does he exist?
Where does he exist?
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Not on that translation, because they're interpreting in the translation.
Well, the problem is that
the
Hebrew's broken fundamentally. The Hebrew is broken in the sense that it's not really a pronoun, but there's a word that doesn't have an antecedent, and that's the word zeh. Zeh means you're pointing to something, but it doesn't say what you're pointing to. And now the most obvious antecedent is the pain, right? Why? So then you get like, well, why is this pain happening to me? Right? That would be your...
Why am I surprised? Why am I suffering pregnancy? And she didn't know she was having twins.
Right. But saying, why is this pain happening to me, that's just not the way you would word it in Hebrew. There are any number of ways you would word it. So look at what Rashi brings you, and I brought you on the sheet. Number one, Rashi says, if I have to suffer this way, lama ze anochi, meaning mis'ava u'mispaleles al herayon. Why did I want to be pregnant? She says, why did I daven for this all these years, right? For 20 years, I've been upset that I couldn't have a kid. And we daven for it, and now I became pregnant, and now I want to know, like, what in the world was I thinking? Which,
surprising,
isn't it?
Not very. That's like a typical lady thing.
No, it's like almost like sapasnished.
And especially if like, she didn't know how hard it was going to be.
Yeah, why does she know? Feel that there's more than one child inside of her, and if there she has this premonition that there's going to be a rift between them.
Well, she doesn't know that yet. She says this before she gets the news.
So what is this thing he throws it to, according to Rashi? Does he comment there?
But he says like they're churning and running around. He doesn't give...
So according to Rashi, it's like a regular kicking...
Oh, not necessarily regular. Keep in mind, Rashi was never pregnant. Yes.
Serious.
Absolutely.
Especially twins. If you have twins,
I'm not in any way. I'm the least qualified person in this room to talk about this.
But it's shocking. She was deafening so long for this. That why would she say this now? It's really
And this is—it's not just that. Like this is Rivka we're talking about, and this is what the Torah chose to record of her words.
Yeah.
Like, if it's really just, you know, minor complaint, then why does it make it into the Chumash? What is it? It's a very hard line to read that way, and Ramban doesn't like it.
It's also a little bit like Didi's from the Pshat. It doesn't say anything about dominating. Like, why would I want this? It's somewhat the classic thing.
Well, no, but we were told before that they doubt it.
I know, but, like, it sounds like, so she... According to Rashi, the pasuk is only saying half of her sentence.
Yeah.
Lama ze anochi, dot, dot, dot.
Right, effectively, if you read it that way, then the word zeh, the antecedent for zeh, will be the davening that was described beforehand. Like, why was this davening for me? What was I davening for? That would be one way to take it. Ramban has a different approach. He goes more dramatic with it. Lama ze anochi ba'olam. Why should I exist? Halavai eineni. I wish I didn't exist, he says. She'amus o shalo ayisi. To die or to never have lived.
This is extreme.
Maybe she knew that it was a Russia.
Well,
she knows nothing of this.
Yeah. The whole Avodazar thing, she's like, oh my gosh, my kid's crazy, I want Avodazar.
She knows nothing right now.
Just in pain. She had a lot of pain.
Yeah. These explanations are difficult, and everybody, like, as they read this, you have to know. Rashi and Ramban are struggling here. The grammar doesn't fit. She didn't say, why should I be pregnant? She didn't say, why should I live? She's been waiting 20 years for this. Is the pain of pregnancy, however bad, really going to make her say, I wish I had never been born? Not only that, look at the answer she's going to get. Right? What's the response? You have two kids inside of you, right? Two nations, I should say. Shnei goyim bevetnech. Two nations are inside of you. Two nations are going to separate from your me'ayim, from being inside you. Ula'om mila'om ye'ematz. One nation is going to be stronger than the other. V'rav yavod se'ir. And the greater will serve the younger. How did that help?
Yeah, exactly.
In what way did that answer the question of why should I live? Oh, I should live in order to birth a problem for the UN. Yeah. The question and the answer are not suited to each other if her question is really this question of why do I have to deal with such pain? You have to deal with such pain because your kids are going to make you miserable for the rest of your life. That's essentially what she's just been told. So, I saw an article online a couple of years ago, which I really liked, and I gave you the link for it, so you could read it if you want. It's source number 3. It's in Hebrew. From a professor at Bar-Ilan. And what she suggests is, you have to look back at Rivka's background. Rivka grows up in a pagan household, right? Her family is not the family that Yitzchak knows. Eliezer shows up, coming as an emissary of Avraham, and says, you're special. You were chosen. You're not just some pagan person living off in Aram. You have a unique mission to perform. And he does that from the beginning. Right? Remember we talked about last week, the whole business at the well with giving the camels water. Right? Remember what Eliezer does? He comes into the house and he says, you won't believe what happened. I told God that what I want is to find this woman who's going to offer water to me, and she's going to offer water to the camels, and that's exactly what Rivka did. There was a prophecy about her, essentially, is what he's saying, right? She's the chosen one. She has this miracle that is associated with her, and not only is she special because of her conduct, but she's special because Hashem has identified her as being special. And then, the family hesitates and says, well, maybe she shouldn't go. And she says, no, I'm going to go. Eliezer has reiterated that God has chosen her. Don't hold me up. And then her family gives her a beautiful bracha. Right? They give her a bracha, which is so beautiful. We use it today at a badeken. Right? These Arameans, right? Lavan and Co. Right? Achoseinu at hayil alfei revava is Lavan talking.
I read the Midrash says that it was bad. She didn't have kids for many years because of that bracha, because Hashem didn't want it to come true because of
right. So inevitably we will have a problem with the fact that the bracha is being given by a bad person, right, who we don't like.
But it's happened.
Yes. Like with Bilam. And in the same way, you will find Midrashim on Bilam's curses, which became brachos, which try to identify curses within each of them except for Matovu. Matovu was the only pure line in the mix because the Midrash is struggling with the fact that these came from terrible people.
Well, in Shat, Laman's not terrible. Is he?
I think so. I mean, what would you say if somebody who was asked to marry Rachel Bitzchak Tana?
He's horrible.
Right, that's how it is with you.
So first,
it's very important to remember when you're dealing with Medrash that Medrash has a reason for existing. Medrash is not random, and it's drawing on things within the Pesukim. I wouldn't take it lightly and dismiss it. But at the same time, if you want something that's in the Pesukim, just read about what happens with him and Yaakov. Read about him changing the salary on Yaakov all those times. Read about him coming to Yaakov and saying, well, your kids are my kids, and your wives, they're all my daughters, and you have nothing, everything belongs to me. The fact that God has to come to him and say, don't harm Yaakov, tells you something about who we're dealing with. You can't, terrible pun, but you can't whitewash Lavan. I'm sorry, it just came out. So Rivka has this bracha from Lavan and Co. saying, you will become many, your children will conquer their enemies. And she's the special and chosen person when she leaves Laban's house. Then she spends 20 years with Yitzchak, and she's not able to have kids, but she knows that something is supposed to come of her. She's supposed to be the next in the line, and finally she becomes pregnant, but in a way that seems wrong. Something must be wrong, because if I am this special person and I'm supposed to be the matriarch of the Jewish people, then why is it that there's this turbulence inside me? Maybe I'm in fact not worthy. Maybe there's something wrong with me. And in fact, if you look back at the beginning of the parsha, look at the way they're introduced, right? When it tells you, they told us Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram Lidis Yitzchak, right? The second pasuk in the parsha. Vayi Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana, Yitzchak was 40 years old. Bekachtoez Rivka bas Bisuel ha'arami, mi padan aram. Right? When he married who? Right? Yitzchak, son of Abraham, married Rivka, the daughter of Bisuel the Aramean from Padan Aram, Achos Lavan ha'arami, who is the sister of Lavan. Like, that's not the way you want to be introduced. Right? She would have been a lot happier if they just said, who married Rivka? But it's all weighing on her. This feeling of maybe in fact she's not worthy. And so she turns to Hashem and she says, Lama ze anochi, why did you pick me? If I am Aramean, if my family are such rotten people, if I didn't deserve to become pregnant all these years, and now that I did, clearly it's rejecting me in some way because I'm struggling with this. Lama ze anochi, why'd you pick me? To which you read the response she gets. Shnei goyim bivitnech. There are two nations in your womb. Shnei lomim mimeayich yiparedu. The two nations are going to separate coming from you. And meaning, you're the one who is suited to this task. It's you, Rivka, who are supposed to be the one to be the mother of these children, because you're the one who's going to be able to handle this. It's about, it is for you.
Is there any like support? I feel like it's very far-fetched.
Doesn't it sound far-fetched?
No.
The fact that the psukim work with mimei ayich, the emphasis in the psukim of it's coming from you, is I think a strong point. A second strong point in support of this, although Dr. Tsohar I don't think pointed it out, but take a look at number four. Look what Ramban says. Ramban is talking about the decision of Yitzhak to give the bracha to Esav, instead of giving it to Yaakov. And Ramban is bothered. Doesn't he know Rav Ya'avod Seir? Right? The older one is going to serve the younger one. Why is he trying to give the bracha to the older one? Says Ramban, Nira shalo higida lo Rivka me'olam hanavu asher amar Hashem lo v'Rav Ya'avod Seir. It must be Rivka never told him about this. Why in the world would she had a nevuah. Why in the world would she not tell her husband about this? And he says, it can't be, because otherwise why would Yitzchak be trying to contravene the message? The answer is, she doesn't tell him because it's all on her. It's about Rivka specifically, and Rivka has to be the one to do this, which, to me, is why Rivka has the guts to do what she does later in the parsha with the brachos. Right? I mean, she is going to engineer a swap. Yitzchak thinks that he should give the bracha to Esav. And the future of whatever nation this is, they won't be called the Jewish people, I suppose, but the future of the dream of Abraham and Sarah, Yitzchak believes, lies with Esav. And Rivka said, absolutely not. And I know that it's for me to do this, which is why when Yaakov says to his mother, that's going to kill me, right? He says, I'm going to get cursed. I won't get a bracha. I'll get cursed instead. What's her response?
I'll take your curse.
Your curse is on me. That's a very bold thing to say. Your curse is on my head. It's not. It's on me. The whole thing's been on me from the start. It was always about me. That's the role that Rivka plays. And just to add one more note to it, I'll take a question, but there's a very interesting link between Rivka and Batsheva. Batsheva meaning Batsheva from David and Batsheva, Batsheva mother of Shlomo. if you read the Haftarah last week, when it talked about the continuity of the monarchy after David and how Adoniyahu wants to take the throne, right? Who is it who thwarts Adoniyahu's coup?
Bathsheba.
Sorry. Okay, Bathsheba is the one who thwarts this coup. She's the one who comes to Nathan the Navi and she says to him, you know, there's been this attempt to take the throne, but I thought my son Shlomo was supposed to become king. And I don't remember if Nathan goes to her, she goes to Nathan. But then the two of them come to David, and she doesn't make everything happen out front. She just, you know, gives him the news of what's going on. And that's enough to sway David to act. And then after David dies, this isn't in Haftarah, this is further on in Malachim Aleph, Adoniyahu tries again. And he comes to Bathsheba, tries to trick her into enabling him to lead this coup and take the throne instead of Shlomo. He somehow thinks that she's not smart. He doesn't recognize who he's dealing with. And once again, very quietly, she manages to thwart him. What happens is, he says, you know, wouldn't it be great if I would be allowed to marry my father's concubine? He wants to marry Abishag.
That's right, Abishag.
Did he,
in the end, he was so sick that they allowed it physically?
Well, that's what he demands. That's what he asks. No, you think of David being sick, and that was Abishag.
Okay,
but he says, I would like to have Abishag. And Bathsheba hears him out, and Bathsheba goes to her son Shlomo. And she says to him, you know, your brother requested Abishag. Isn't that interesting? And through that, manages to tip off Shlomo that something is wrong. And Shlomo is able to put down the rebellion of Adoniyahu. And that's pretty much it for Adoniyahu. But she manages to control things and manipulate things. Manipulate is a bad word.
Maneuver
is better. She manages to maneuver things behind the scenes in order to make sure the result is where it needs to be. And it's the same thing with Rivka. Rivka knows that she's the one who's in charge. She's the one who knows that she's responsible. And so she makes sure to bring things to the ending that it's supposed to have. Diana, you were going to say.
I was going to say, if Yitzhak didn't really know exactly what's going on, why couldn't just the continuation go through both of his tongues? Like, if he sees that both tzaddikim, one's more outgoing, one's more sitting in the tent, why does he have to choose? Like, I don't look at my kids like, you're going to continue us. I hope they'll all be great to continue.
Right.
I was thinking, why can't he make two brachot?
Yeah, like, the tribe,
or maybe he won't even want to
continue. Why can't, if these two boys are tzaddikim, why can't they both be continuation?
Right.
Because Yitzhak was only doing one, he just didn't know which one.
Right. So one possibility is that Yitzhak has some special knowledge that we're unaware of. Yeah, then why wouldn't we be told about this? Another possibility is that the general flow is one is the leader, one is the one who's in charge, and then the others respond to that person. And that's something that you find in general within Chumash. You know, the concept of primogeniture, the idea that the first one born in the family is special, begins with the idea that one of the kids is going to be the one who's going to take over after the father is gone and is going to look after everybody else. And because he has the responsibility of looking after everyone else, we're also going to give him an extra portion. It's his compensation, effectively, for having to do that. So he has to make sure everybody's okay. Therefore, he's going to get extra. Now, Sefer Bereishis is all about the collapse of primogeniture, right? The best way to know who in Sefer Bereishis is going to lose in anything that comes up is that person born first. The only one in all of Sefer Bereishis who is a firstborn and has everything go well is Abraham. Right? And I'm not even so sure that Abraham is actually older. It's not clear cut. He's presented first in the list of names, but it's not proof. But with everybody else, the firstborn is always in trouble. There's a debate as to whether Shem is older or Yefes is older, because the Pesukim can present them in interesting ways. But basically, from there down, it's bad news to be the firstborn. You don't want to be the firstborn. And part of that is because it's really a polemic against the idea that somehow someone is special just because of where they're born. It's what you do. It's not about, you know, the gifts that you start out in life.
Doesn't
Torah
view it still, like Pishayim for the Bukhar?
Only because in family life, the Bechor is going to be the one who has to take care of everybody, and the Bechor deserves compensation. But it's not a statement of this person is better. It goes to great lengths to say this person is not better. The examples that we have, I mean, when you start thinking through all the different, you know, families that we know of and what happens with the first, it's a disaster. But there's always somebody who is sort of the leader. It reminds me a little bit, the Gemara in Sanhedrin notes that when Moshe speaks to Yehoshua in Parshas Vayelech and he wants to commission him to lead the Jews, he says to Yehoshua, Ki ata tavo es b'nei Yisrael el ha'aretz. However, when Hashem gives the instruction, he says, Ki ata tavi es b'nei Yisrael el ha'aretz. And so the Gemara wants to know, what's the difference? And the answer is, Moshe says to Yehoshua, Ki ata tavo es b'nei Yisrael. You will come into the land with the Jewish people, meaning you and the elders are going to guide them and it'll all work out with this kind of joint government. And Hashem's response is, no, it's Kiata Tavi. You're going to bring them in, meaning if they don't listen to you, Tol Makel V'Hachal Kadkadam. That's the Gemara's language. Take a stick and hit them on the head. Dabar Echad Lador V'Ein Shnei Dabarim Lador. There's one leader to a generation. You can't lead by committee. Now, we live in a world that tends much more towards the sort of cooperative leadership type of model. But we see that it does fall apart. If you get too cooperative, if there isn't somebody who's responsible to make the decision and decide this is what we're going to do, then when you get into the hard situations, not the day-to-day life, but the hard situations, things fall apart. Because this one wants to go that way, and this one wants to go that way, and they're all concerned about the fallout if you go if you take the other one's idea. So we have this need for somebody, and I think that's what's coming through here, going back to Diana's question. It's not so much that there has to be one, and the other one is chopped liver. There is a bracha that remains, and the bracha that Esav gets isn't a bad bracha. It's just not as good as what he gives to Yaakov. That's what I would say. But it's for sure a problem for them down the line. I mean, that to my mind is what causes the sale of Yosef.
Yeah, because they said,
well,
maybe we'll just choose one.
Yeah. The brothers assume, knowing their lineage, Yishmael got kicked out and Yitzchak was kept. Esav got kicked out, Yaakov was kept. Our father is treating Yosef as though he is the new Yaakov, the new Yitzchak, right? And we are going to be the ones who are kicked out. Let's kick him out first. That's essentially what happens. And they have precedent for it in the family. So, but in terms of Rivka making this decision, I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that her question is, you told me I was special. Really? Am I? Or am I, fooling myself? Lama ze anochi? And the answer to her is, it is you. And that's what emboldens her to do what she does, in the rest of the parsha. Okay, that's one thought. I'm jumping the story of the sale of the Bechora, not because it's not fun, but because there's so much in this parsha, and there are things that I do want us to get to. So they descend to Gerar, and you have the whole incident with Abimelech, in which, once again, there's this claim of not being married, and then after that's over, They go catch the audio. They do that again, although they're not as good at it as Abraham and Sarah are. They get caught even before anything happens. No one has actually taken Rivka before they get found out. But after that, Yitzchak decides he's going to be a farmer. Which, on the face of it, is a very difficult thing to do where they are, because, as I said in the outline, they're in the high Negev. Like, you're not getting water. There's no rain. I think Beersheba is something like 20 millimeters of rain a year, and you're north of Beersheba. You're not that far south. But still, it's a very hard thing to do, and he knows it. He needs water. And so, he wants to go to his father's wells, which were dug in that area. Right? And remember, everybody loves Abraham, right? Everybody gets along with Abraham. They called Abraham Nisi Elokim Ata B'Sochenu. So the only one who doesn't like Abraham well, Paro didn't like Avram so much, you know. Okay, and he had a reason, I suppose. But they filled up Avraham's wells, and they forced him out of Gerar. They forced Yitzhak out of Gerar because they filled up Avraham's wells. I think, did I bring it on the sheet, or Shimshon or Fall Hirsch, on why they filled the wells? Oh, you know what, I have it. No, that's a different Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. Okay, so just worth noting, Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch explains that they filled the wells. I know who it is. Oh, it's what's coming up here. Hang on. But they filled Abraham's wells. Right, so that's what I want to, that's where I want to go with this. Because they fill Abraham's wells, and then they fill Yitzhak's wells. Or they steal Yitzhak's wells, I should say. But you have to ask yourself, why in the world would you fill up well in the negative? Right? I mean, that's like a historically bad idea. We live in a desert. Someone succeeded in finding water. Oh, let's fill it up with dirt. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It doesn't make any sense. So, you know, the simple read of the story is that it's out of control jealousy. You know, they don't like Abraham. They don't want anything to do with him, and they're going to destroy his wealth. That's one approach. Another approach is that it's religious strife. Take a look at number 5. From Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg in his Haksava HaKabbalah. He says, Kacha asa Avraham lahatos es levav machishe kel lekabal aleim o malchus shemayim. He says, Avraham, and he doesn't give you, I should have probably translated more of it. The antecedent here is that Avraham names the wells with Hashem's name. All of the wells are named in ways that thank Hashem for what he has received. So Avraham does this because he wants them to learn about God. When Avram was still alive, everybody was afraid of Avram. They weren't going to mess with Avram. And so, they left the wells as they were, with their names. But after Avram died, they went back to their idols. And in order to keep people from remembering the names of the wells, because the names were all the opposite of their idolatry, they sealed up the wells, bless you. It was a religious struggle, is the way that Aksava Kabbalah sees it. And yeah, even if it means that we're hurting ourselves, we're going to fill in those wells. We don't want anybody to remember the names that Avraham gave them. Right? Remember the names. Like the names were like Hashem Nisi, Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Yeah, like that's the way Avraham names places. It's always about the encounter with Hashem. Be'er Lachai Ro'i is also Hagar. But that's the idea. But I think there's another factor involved. And I think from a historical perspective, this makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of it is about insecurity over their position within the land. We talked about last week the difference between the nations who live near the Yarden and the nations who live on the shores of the Mediterranean. The ones who live by the Yarden are Canaan. They've lived in that land forever, right? They're descended from Canaan, from Ham, and that's where they settled and they spread out. And the Canaani, the Chiti, and Mori, all of them are descendants of Canaan. And they're anchored there. They have nothing to fear. The Plishtim, on the other hand, are sea people. They came in from the Mediterranean because they were kicked out of the places where they had been before. And so they come here and settle in the land. They haven't been there long. In fact, the main body of the Plishtim isn't even there yet. We call them Plishtim based on the region in which they live and the fact that Plishtim is from the word Polish, to invade. But the group that you have has a very tenuous hold in the land. And that changes the way they respond to these Hebrews who have moved down here. If you're Canaan, you don't care. Avram can come into the land, he can settle among us, Ger, Toshav, whatever he wants to be. He's no threat to us. We're fine. The Plishtim, on the other hand, are foreigners. They see Avram as a threat. Do you remember after Yitzchak is born, But before the Akedah, so it's the end of the Kriyas HaTorah for the first day of Rosh Hashanah, there's this little passage after Yishmael is kicked out of the house and before we get to the Akedah. Remember what happens in that little section before the Akedah? If you have a chumash, you can look. It's okay. Bereishis Parashat Aleph. Before the Akedah, correct. Yeah, exactly. Right. Abimelech comes to Abraham, and he says, I want to make a deal with you. I want to make a covenant with you. But who does Abimelech bring with him? Right. Pichol Sar Tzibaho. He brings a general to make a peace treaty with Abraham. Project the message? A little bit. Right? He didn't bring his diplomats. He brought his general. He's sending a message to Abraham, which is, you have two choices, right? Sign on the dotted line or war. That's the way that the Plishtim look at these Jews who have entered the land. And so after Abraham leaves, they fill up the wells so that nobody can continue Abraham's claim to the land. Lest anybody, like Yitzchak in fact, come back here and say, you know, we have a right to live here too. Well, wells, what are you talking about? We don't know what you mean. That's what they're trying to accomplish. Yitzchak, on the other hand, persists. Right? When Abraham had this problem, when they filled up his wells, Abraham left. He moved. He went to Beersheba. Yitzchak keeps on digging. Right? One of the best pieces of advice I ever got in the rabbinate, when I was a shul rabbi. If you find yourself at the bottom of a hole, what do? The opposite. stop digging. Right? It fits a variety of situations. But it's good advice, generally speaking. So what is he doing? He knows they hate him. He knows they filled up his father's wells. He knows that whatever he has succeeded in digging, they've taken control of. Why doesn't he stop digging? He is persistent. That's one word for it.
Where does it say that about his father?
That what? That he keeps on digging? It's all Parakhavav in Gracious. The same section. Yeah, the same. Well, it could be. We don't know for sure. Theoretically possible, but it could also be like the name, like Abimelech, could just be a royal. Yeah.
Where would the Plishtim come? Originally?
So the northern, northeastern shores of the Mediterranean is generally the guess, like the Ionian Sea area. I think Greece / Turkey is that area, but honestly, as an American, my knowledge of geography is poor. So, but I believe Greece or Turkey. So, what he's doing really is he's sticking with the model of his mother, right? Yitzchak is Sarah's son in many ways, but in particular, this idea of persistence is a trait of Sarah. And I don't mean that to put down Abraham, but Abraham has no problems. Things are easy if you're Abraham. Because any time there's an obstacle, anytime something bad happens, what's going to happen if you're Abraham? Hashem will help you, but even before that, Hashem will speak to you. Right? God talks to Abraham. He says, go to this land that I'm going to show you. What does Sarah know? Abraham told me we have to pack up and move. Right? He says to Abraham, your children are going to inherit this land. He says to Abraham, I want you to send away your son. I want you to do the Akedah. It doesn't make it easy to be Abraham. He still has 10 tests, and he's asked to do difficult things, but it's a whole lot easier when God is talking to you, as opposed to where you just hear it from somebody else. Abraham is the Navi, and Sarah is the Jewish people. That's the model. Sarah is much more a model for who we become than Abraham is. When, you know, and despite that, she overcomes hurdle after hurdle, right? She can't produce a child, and that goes on for a very long time. She has this whole business with Hagar mocking her when she's able to produce a child. She needs to defend Yitzchak from Ishmael. She's abandoned to Paro. She's abandoned to Abimelech. She has all of these challenges, and she just keeps on going without direct communication. The best you can say is maybe. When Hashem says, whatever Sarah tells you, you should listen to her. So this is, you know, maybe there's a nevuah that she has that tells her to send out Ishmael.
I thought she's a nevuah.
So that would be the nevuah. If there's a nevuah, it's that one. But again, the Torah is not even telling us that. It wants to position Sarah this way, that we should understand that there are two models of the Jew. There's the Jew who talks to God, and then there's the Jew who follows without having had that communication. That's who Sarah is. And Yitzchak is much more like Sarah. because Yitzhak, through his early years, the threats from Yishmael, his father trying to kill him, he doesn't have any communication with Hashem at that stage. Later in life, Hashem talks to Yitzhak. After Avram is gone, Hashem talks to Yitzhak. But, you know, consider what the Akedah means if you don't have God saying, I want you to go ahead and do this. Right? Yitzhak is much more like Sarah in that sense. And so here, Yitzhak is building a life for himself and his family. He doesn't go to war, which one could envision Avraham doing, frankly, because he does that successfully. Yitzhak doesn't go to war. He just keeps on digging wells. And to me, I think this is actually a very important point, not only in Yitzhak's day, but it's a very important point in terms of our lives and the world that we live in, because our world is much more Plishti than it is Kanani, in the sense that the world is such an insecure place. And I don't just mean this geographically in terms of populations that live in different places, but each ethnicity insists on its rights and no one is going to take advantage of me. And each, you know, type of demographic and lifestyle, they're all afraid someone's going to say something negative about me, somebody's going to attack me, and as a result, they all attack each other. It's a very insecure world. And so this persistence of Yitzchak becomes really important. I brought you a quote from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. Had nothing to do with this in his original context. But the truth is, it doesn't have that much to do with the Torah now either, so I'm not going to read it out loud, but I like the quote. But his point, the point that he makes here in number 6 is about being ourselves, and being ourselves in a very strong and positive way, and that enabling us to speak, enabling us to be a voice. Living in a very insecure world, we have to be the ones who keep on digging, so to speak. That's the that's what I see in this in the descent to Gerar, in this battle over the wells. Okay, then we move on to Esav's marriages. So Esav's marriages upset Yitzchak and Rivka, and it's a very odd sentence. If you take a look at it's Bereishis Chavvav Lamed Daled. You have it? Sorry? Yeah, Yehudas, huh? Nice Jewish name.
Yeah.
What could be wrong? Right, the answer is the name Yehuda is not a Jewish name originally. Sorry. It predated us. Granted that when Leah gives it, it's with the message of Hapam Odeas Hashem, right? She takes it as a name of thanking Hashem. Nonetheless, the name existed before there were Jews. The name existed, you know, you can see here, Yehudit is one of them.
Where else? Where is it?
In this pasuk?
But not
yes, that's true. Okay. Okay. So, this line is a very odd line, right? It comes after this whole business with Gerar, and right before the bracha, right? Yitzchak saying, it's time for me to give the bracha. Why in the world is this line about Yitzchak and Rivka not liking Esav's wives thrown in here? Oh, Bat Be'eri, Be'eri named for Be'er. Clever. The only problem is that it's from the wrong area, right? They're Chiti, yeah.
You're asking what's like the smichas to the...
Yeah, I mean, why throw in this sentence here?
Yeah, more of her turbulence.
More of her turbulence? Could be. It could be that it's just chronologically so. You know, it could be that this is in between the business with the wells and the bracha time. Because the bracha happens once Yitzchak is much older. So maybe this happened in the interim. That's a possibility. It also could be that it's meant to show that Esav is unworthy. You know, this is who you're dealing with, and that will explain why Rivka is about to do what she does.
But Yitzchak also knows, because Yitzchak also upset.
Yeah, I want to come back to that. It's a good question. Hold the question. It's also possible.
Showing the split. Like, this is where they're starting to
diverge, right. It also introduces the flight of Yaakov later. Meaning at the end of this story, Yaakov is going to have to leave, because Rivka is going to say, I don't want him marrying a local girl. So that will fit very well with Esav married local girls, and, you know, it was a source of bitterness. So it's also introducing what's actually going to happen at the end of the story. I think all of these are valid answers for why this is here. So we don't get any details to work with in terms of, are they back in Hebron or are they still in the Beersheba region?
But they're in there also?
The only thing I would say is that they have to really be in Canaan now. They actually have to be back in Canaan because of the Chiti there, and because what she's actually going to say after this whole business, when she justifies sending Yaakov away, she says, "Katzti b'chayai b'pnei benot chet," right? And she says, "Imokeach Yaakov b'benot chet ka'il b'benot ha'aretz." She says, if Yaakov is going to take women like these, women of the land, lamali chayim, why should I live? Which, more drama from Rivka. But again, I think along the same lines, like, you know, was this why you picked me? So that my child should
have been. But then she sends him to Laban.
She sends him to the family.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how it went also.
She's from Aram.
Where's Aram?
Aram is off to the east. Aram is the area that Abram came from. Right. That was in the bit. If you look at the second pasuk of the parsha, you'll see it specified, Padan Aram. And that's where he's going to go. And yes, it's true, the people he's going to are not wonderful. That's Lavan's, you know, that's Lavan's place, but they're not Canaanim. It's a case of the less bad situation. That's really what she's looking for. Yes, no, they are one of the Canaani tribes. They're the ones who were in Hebron, who Abram bought Maaseh Machpelah from. That's the same group. So, you know, on that basis, I would say they're back in Hebron at this stage. Okay, so looking at this, you know, this business of the wives of Yitzchak, the wives of Esav, I should say, I wanted to point something out here regarding what happens with the with these wives, and where it says in the pasuk that they were a source of bitterness for Yitzchak and Rivka. Take a look at source number 7, please, on the sheet. Medrash from Bereishis Rabba. It asks, Lama le Yitzchak tchila? Why Yitzchak first? Why is Yitzchak upset first? Meaning, if you go back to the pasuk, it said they were a source of bitterness for Yitzchak and Rivka.
Someone has to be first.
So that would be my answer.
No, I bet it's a surprise. We're saying Rivka the whole way. Yitzchak's going on the wrong path.
That's an interesting approach.
It's like Yitzchak's first, like, oh my gosh, look, we married.
Right. He thought Esav was good the whole time. It's true.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's like.
So let me go back a step. First, because Dina asked the question of, well, somebody had to be mentioned first in the pasuk. So the Eitz Yosef commenting on the Medrash says that the Medrash is picking up on the fact that it says Li Yitzchak Ula Rivka. It could have just said Li Yitzchak VeRivka. The added Lamed and to Rivka suggests that there's actually some kind of a delay in between, a different reaction. That Yitzchak is having one reaction and Rivka is having a different reaction. Now, it's interesting. I have not seen anybody make the suggestion yet of this being just a shock to Yitzchak, because, like, I thought he was a good guy. But I think it's an interesting point. Rivka knew already. Okay, so write your Perush on the Torah, and now you've got an explanation to put in for Precious Told Us. This is good. But look at what the Medrash does. The Medrash does something very surprising with this. Ela al yedei shaisa Rivka bas kumrim. Idolatry didn't bother Rivka so much. She came from a place where that was the norm. Vizel Yedejaya ben Kedoshim, Hayamakbid Altinofas Avodas Kochavim. But Yitzchak, he's from Abram and Sarah. He's horrified. And therefore it's Li Yitzchak Tchilo. Yitzchak is upset first. That's one line. Alternatively, it gets even worse. Davar Acher. Lama Li Yitzchak Tchilo, why Yitzchak first? Ela Lafisha Davar Talui Ba. Because it stemmed from her. And this goes back to the pasuk we explained in the beginning, the emphasis on mi mei ayich, it's coming from you. Vayomer Hashem, la shnei goyim bivitnech. It's because of you.
That
there's an influence that comes through Rivka to Esav.
Blaming Rivka?
That's when you married someone with idolatry. That's what Yitzchak's thinking.
You're trying to get back to the wives. I didn't even go there. Must be your side.
But they're used to grandparents and aunts. They were two great themselves.
Yeah, they're more distant.
Yeah.
And it didn't manifest in, you know, two generations.
Maybe it's their fault they didn't send him home to go find some friend that you don't see anywhere. They say, okay, both of you go home and get wives.
Well, keep in mind, Rivka only sends him as... she sent him to get away from Esav. The business of, you know, it would be good for him to get a wife from there is just a pretext that she doesn't have to, you know, harm Yitzhak by telling him about his son. By the way, you know, your beloved Esav wants to kill Yaakov.
At what point was Esav blind?
We only know about it from here. There is a medrash linking it back to the Akedah as some kind of influence of the Akedah, but he's digging wells and planting things, so I have to think he's been able to see until now. At some point, well, the pasuk, if I take the pasuk straight, it says, "Vayiki zaken Yitzchak, batichena inav miros." Right? He became old, and his eyes were dimmed, and he couldn't see. So the straight read of the pasuk is it was result of age, macular degeneration, you know, whatever. He's 180 when he dies, but he's not going to die for quite a while after this. Sorry.
So wasn't from the tears of.
Right, they have the tears of the malachim idea, which is a very difficult idea to understand because malachim don't have bodies, much less tear ducts. The other idea is that it's from the smoke from the offerings that Esau's wives are bringing for Avodah Zarah, lead to the question of, well, then why does it affect Rivka that way? Mm-hmm. You know, what's and that, you know, could be yeah. But the but this medrash says that the wives bother Yitzchak more than they bother Rivka. Rivka has an association with Avodah Zarah. Oh boy. Isn't it disturbing? Well, look at the next one.
It's disturbing. It's a reality. You're exposed to something regularly. You're desensitized to it.
And the second half of the medrash?
And also, I was just going to ask you that. Shalaypa, does that mean her fault? That's not what it says. If you read it according to just what it says, it just means because literally they grew in her and she got this Yitzchak. So therefore it says she has
fun. So if you want, I'll email you about the full medrash later. Like, I didn't bring the full thing, but it's her. Yeah, it's totally like, yeah, this is your side of the family, and that's why this is happening. Take a look at number 8, though. 8 and 9 are midrashim that take us in a different direction. They quote a pasuk from Yeshaya, Matzdike resha ekev shochad. Those who find the wicked innocent for the sake of reward. And the rest of the pasuk is at the end of this medrash. The righteousness of the righteous will leave him. In other words, if somebody tries to find the wicked innocent in order to gain something, they will end up losing their righteousness and some benefit of their righteousness. That's the pasuk, and that's what the medrash is saying, and the medrash applies it to Yitzchak. In other words, Yitzchak loses his sight because he accepted the food from Esav. Going back to the beginning, when it said that Yitzchak loved Esav, kitzayid b'fiv, which on a very simple read means Esav brought him food. Yitzchak is drawn in by Esav. He favors Esav because of the food that Esav brings him. And therefore, he becomes blinded, figuratively, literally, however you want to read this. But then look what happens in number 9, where the Medrash then follows up with a further statement. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Lo mi masha haisa Rivka oheves es Yaakov yoser me Esav asa es hadavar hazeh. It's not that Rivka loved Yaakov more than Esav, and therefore she switched the brachos because I want to help Yaakov. Ela amra lo yeol v'yit'e behahu saba. She said, I don't want him to fool my husband, the old man. I don't want Esav to get away with this. In other words, it's exactly the opposite. Whereas the previous medrash that we read pins her as the source of the idolatry, this other medrash looks at her as the one trying to correct for the idolatry of Esav, and she's the one who is aware of what's going on, and she's not going to let Esav get away with the deception. The Eitz Yosef comments here and says, you know that it's not out of love for Yaakov, because if it was just love for Yaakov, she would have arranged for Yaakov to also get a nice bracha. She didn't have to take down Esav and do this whole manipulation and risk getting caught and everything else if it was just a matter of, I want Yaakov to get a nice bracha. She wants to make sure Esav isn't going to get it. And because she sees what's going on and she operates against him.
Does this look very manipulative and dishonest to the rest of the world, like who hears this story?
I think so.
Bible, yeah. People know the story, so they twist it, or they didn't paint Rivka as good.
No, I mean, they view her as more in the know than her husband. In other words, she knows what's going on, and she knows what's appropriate, and she is going to act on behalf of what she knows to be right.
And it has to be in such a seemingly dishonest way.
Yeah.
Like, not MS, which was Yaakov's mantra, was MS.
Well, it is, but it's also what he struggles with his entire life. Meaning, Yaakov goes for honesty his whole life, and he never finds it. His whole life is one lie after another. Right? I mean, the whole way down the line.
So he obviously finds it at some point, or really
wants. No, I don't think it's that he finds it. I think it's that he's searching for it. If you remember the pasuk in the Shir Shal Yom for Yom Rishon, Zed Dor Dor Shav, Mvakshei Fanecha Yaakov. Right? Zela. This is the generation that seeks God. This is Yaakov. He's forever seeking it. He doesn't find it. His whole life, I mean, maybe the last 17 years when he's living in Mitzrayim, maybe at that point he has it. But until then, starting with this business with the Bracha and the Bechorah with Esav, and then they sell, then the business with Lavan and his wives, thank you, I would have forgotten that. And then Shechem and Shimon and Levi tricking the people of Shechem. And then they sell, and then the business with Esav where he tells Esav, yeah, you go ahead and I'm going to catch up. And then the sale of by the way, Yehuda and Tamar, and then the sale of Yosef, and the brothers lying to him about that, and then Yosef lying, pretending to be the viceroy in Egypt, you know, instead of Yosef yourself.
That's teaching us what MS really is. MS is not telling the truth.
That MS is really what? Then what is MS?
MS is,
it's a lot.
What's that?
MS is that?
No, I mean, look.
Like, if someone asks if you're pregnant,
it's a big problem.
You have to tell them.
It's a big problem. You all learn different things for it.
No, what you're saying can be correct, that there are higher values. There may be higher values, but you can't redefine the word true.
Well, you can't. True, MS is not true, though. You're not defining true differently. You're saying that MS doesn't mean true.
MS, as it's used in Tanakh, means that which fits the facts. Well, I'll tell you what. Find the apostle that uses the word MS, and it doesn't mean that which is true. I mean, it's not.
It's like defining, you know, when you're like caught in the cycle, you're defining it not as MS.
What people are dealing with, what they're struggling with, is the problem that there are higher values sometimes than telling someone that which is accurate historically. The fact is that Lashon Hara is telling truth, and we say not to say it.
No, but the irony is that Yaakov was called Ish Emes.
Because he's looking for
the
it.
Whole life.
Because he spends his whole life trying and pursuing and being very frustrated by the fact that he doesn't live in a world
okay,
of truth.
Okay, but he thinks he's called Ish Emes, and they're
coming. Or maybe
no, but
like all the dishonesty to be the upper hand and live his life the opposite of what would have been expected for someone who was challenged with so many, you know, questions of not having MS. He overcomes everything.
Besides for this story, Yaakov is on the receiving end of dishonesty. He's not the one that's dishonest.
With Lavan he plays a role also. With Shimon and Levi he doesn't. With the sale of Yosef he doesn't. With Yosef's tricks in Mitzrayim he doesn't. That's true. But you can't say that he lives his life without participation. It's just not so. I mean, this is fundamentally a problem. And what Rivka does is fundamentally difficult. Add to that the fact that Rivka doesn't tell Yitzhak. She never tells Yitzhak what's going on. She has to.
Yitzhak knows. He knows when
Esav comes in and he's angry.
Yeah.
Except that Rivka doesn't say to Yitzhak, you know, Esav wants to kill Yaakov, we better send Yaakov away. She says to him, it would be nicer if he married a girl from Padan Aram. She's sparing him this.
But he must know.
I mean, there's more to be said, but it's not going to be for right now. The only thing I didn't want to make sure you see is the Medrash I brought you in number 10. In number 10, this is when Yaakov meets Lavan, and he says, "Ki achi aviyahu v'chi ben Rivkahu." He wants the message to get to Lavan that he is both the brother of Rachel's father. He's not exactly, but it's again a Bereishis style brother. It works. He can be a cousin. It's okay. But he's the brother of Lavan. And he's also Ben Rivka, the son of Rivka. And the Medrash says he's sending a message to Lavan. I can do both. You want, I can be like you. You want, I can be like Rivka. It depends on how you play the game. If you'll be straight with me, I'll be straight with you. that's the statement that the Medrash sees in his statement to Lavan, which matters because in this question of sort of spiritual genetics and does the parent influence the child, what Yaakov is saying is, I have multiple influences. I have the Lavan side of the family influence, which came through Rivka, but then I also have Rivka herself. And Rivka herself is righteous. The tools are there from both sides, and it's up to him to use them appropriately. And effectively, that's why you have a Yaakov and an Esav. Yaakov. This is when Yaakov meets Rachel and he sends a message to Lavan. So he told her, and she conveyed to her father, Ki'achi Aviyahu b'chi ben Rivkahu. That's who, and then Vatar Tzvata Gei, she ran and told this to her father. Alright, there's more to say. There's more to say about his wives, there's more to say about the bracha and so on. There are things here you can read. Maybe later I will send out that the full medrash on Rivka's, you know, influence if I get a chance. Okay. Thank you very much.